Good morning. Like I said earlier, we are so excited that you guys are here with us as we arrive at the midway point of this series that we have been calling At the Movies. Whether you're here with us for the very first time, whether you're checking us out online, or whether you've been here throughout this entire series, what we want you to know is this, is that this series is about so much more than just the larger-than-life props that you see spread throughout the building and the fun that we have on the stage through the band and playing openers that go along with the movies that we're doing or the games that we play to allow everybody to let their hair down, or even the popcorn that you're munching on that you got that was popped at the popcorn at the coffee bar this morning. You see, we believe that this series gives us a unique opportunity to look at some of our favorite movies of all time and to pull out some of the incredible truths that we find within those movies and to begin to relate them to our lives. Because what every single one of us should know is this, is that this story called Our Life is hard. Am I right? Is that there are far things more difficult than moving through life on this earth. And yet when we tune in to check out some of our favorite stories on the big screen, we find stories unfolding before our eyes that captivate and inspire and even provide hope in the midst of difficult circumstances. And because of that, we thought, what better way than to lean into that reality that every time we walk into a movie theater and we sit down for 2 hours, that there is something about the stories that we watch on the big screen that have us hoping that maybe our stories could play out in much the same way. That maybe the way in which they overcome the obstacles of their lives and their stories could be the way I could overcome the obstacles that I am certain to face within my future. Because that's what makes every movie we've ever loved great, am I right? Is that every movie that we've ever loved has this uncanny ability to present this tension, this obstacle that the main character must face. And by the time we reach the end of that 2-hour movie session, the main characters have somehow, most times, against all odds, overcome those insurmountable obstacles in their lives. And we step back and we look at our own lives and our own obstacles, and we begin to believe that maybe, just maybe, we could travel a similar path. You see, the reason we love the movies we love is because these difficulties and obstacles that the main characters face are relatable to our lives and our obstacles. Catch that I didn't say believable. Because the obstacles don't necessarily have to be believable in order for it to be inspiring. It just simply has to relate to the difficulties we've experienced in our own life. For example, one of my favorite movies of all time sets up an obstacle that is predicated on a family not losing their farm to bankruptcy so that they can continue to watch ghosts play baseball in the middle of their cornfield. Not exactly believable, but it doesn't detract from the fact that every time we turn on that movie, when Ray busts out his baseball glove and plays catch with his ghost father right there in the middle of that cornfield, it brings a tear to our good eye. Am I right? Because the difficulty that he's up against and the tension that he's facing in his life, while not believable, relates to the tension I experience in my own lives and the tensions and the obstacles that we've all felt before. And yet, time and time again, what we come back to is that it doesn't necessarily have to be on the big screen. That this truth rings true not only on the big screen, but in every single one of our lives, and it's simply this, that every great story involves overcoming obstacles. Am I right? That every great story we've ever witnessed, we've watched someone live, we've lived ourselves, or we've watched on a movie screen has involved overcoming obstacles. We all want the ending that contains the victory in the face of defeat. But more than that, we want to live the story that's capable of doing that. We want to live a little bit more fearless. We want to be the hero. We want to have the happily ever ending after. And yet the problem with our desire to experience what our favorite characters experience on the big screen is this, is that oftentimes we react in such a way that is far different from the way in which the people on the big screen react. Am I right? Is that oftentimes there is something living deep inside of every single one of us as humanity that pulls us away from the characteristics and the steps necessary in order for us to overcome the obstacles of our life in the exact same way that our favorite characters overcome the obstacles in their lives. You see, in the moments of our lives where we hit a financial rough spot, or difficulties in our marriage, or a calling to a new career that's filled with all sorts of uncertainty and questions of whether we're going to make enough money and this is going to be the right move for our lives and our futures. Or maybe we're up against a health battle, or we find ourselves pursuing a dream or a better use of our time or our resources as a family. Every time we're up against those obstacles of our lives as humanity, we have this tendency to bust out these reactions that are bred deep inside of every single one of us, that live inside of our hearts and that have been created there simply as a coping mechanism. These pulls inside of every single one of us have been developed to protect us, to keep us from failure, to keep us from hurt, to keep us from experiencing things we don't want to experience. And yet what we miss along the way is this, is that every time we bust out one of those natural human reactions to the obstacles we face in our lives, not only does it protect us from failure and hurt, but it also keeps us from taking chances. It keeps us from experiencing something better. It keeps us from accomplishing something more. It keeps us from overcoming the obstacle that's in front of us and living the life we were designed to live. You see, if you haven't seen any of the Rocky movies, there is an incredible obstacle in every single one of the 6 Rocky movies that Rocky must overcome in order for his life to move forward. And if you're a Rocky fan, what you may have noticed is this, is that every single one of the obstacles that Rocky faces along the course of these 6 different movies is not an obstacle that is solely relegated to just within the ring. On the silver screen, it may look like an obstacle or a battle that is being fought solely in the ring, but what we miss or what we may see if we look close enough is this, is that while he may be fighting Ivan Drago, what's actually taking place is that Rocky is fighting the Cold War. Is that while it may look like Rocky is fighting Tommy Gunn, Rocky is actually fighting an internal battle of what it looks like to hold to his identity in the face of returning back to poverty as a family. And as we pick up this 6th and final installment of the Rocky franchise, at least we think so, who knows when they could come out with another one, what we find is that Rocky is up against these 2 relatable obstacles in his life. He finds himself up against age, and the loss of a loved one. And figuring out how to move forward and how to cope with a rising age, now almost into his 60s, and dealing with life that makes him no longer a fighter and no longer capable of doing the career that he's always done, while at the same time dealing with the loss of Adrian. Adrian has passed away to cancer, and he's trying to figure out how to move forward in a couple's world as a single person. And as Rocky deals with these major obstacles in his life, him and the people around him react in much the same way as you and I do. They have these natural human tendencies that rise to the surface in their lives as well. But what we'll find along the way is that it isn't just you and I and Rocky who find themselves reacting in this way when faced with the obstacles of life. What we'll find is that these natural human tendencies have actually existed in every single one of us over the course of the last 6,000 years. That maybe, just maybe, it makes you feel a little bit better to know that you're not alone when you've given in to these natural reactions that pull you away from the future you were designed to live and the ability to overcome the obstacles, no matter how small or how big, that are out in front of you on this very day. You see, there's this tug inside of us with every obstacle that usually comes in the form of 1 of 3 things. And for some of us, every single time we're faced with an obstacle, we do 1 or maybe all 3 of these things in trying to cope and trying to protect ourselves from the hurt that could likely come in facing these obstacles. You see, the first natural reaction for many of us is this, is that when faced with the obstacles of life, we choose to go back to the past. We choose to begin to think about what would it look like for us to just go back to the way things were. And we live our lives by looking in the rearview mirror and remembering how much easier it was when we were single, how much easier it was before we had kids, how much easier it was before we started this business, how much easier it was before we started serving and giving up our time for the sake of somebody else's eternity, how much easier it was before we started investing in relationship and walking alongside of people and their messes and helping them carry burdens. We look back to the times in our lives where it was so much better when we were living in that that house, or we were in that church building. You remember how much easier it was before we went to two services, or before we grew so much and I didn't know everybody else around me. Wouldn't it just be better to go back to the way it was? Wouldn't life just be so much easier? And quite honestly, this natural human reaction that rises up in us doesn't even paint an accurate picture. And this is why. Because the reality is oftentimes as we look back on our past, our flawed human brains have the ability to create a rosier picture of the past than what actually took place. In fact, they have done scientific studies of this, and psychologists have actually created a term that lends itself to the reality that every single one of us as humanity do this. They call it rosy retrospection. And rosy retrospection is this cognitive bias that lives inside of every single one of us that makes us see the past as better than what it actually was. You ever been there before? That as you were walking through it, it was like, this is kind of average. But 10 years down the line, you're like, oh my goodness, that one time, it was so great, and that was so awesome. And that family vacation where we all dressed up in the dinosaur t-shirts and we walked around Cedar Point was so great. And while you were walking through it, you're like, why did mom put us in these? We look absolutely ridiculous, and I can't even have fun doing this. There's this rosy retrospection that the past was always better than what it was. And there's a moment early in the movie where we see Rocky revisiting all of these spots where he shared special moments with Adrian. And day after day, year after year, he keeps coming back to these different spots around Philadelphia. And he keeps going back and remembering how good, or at least he thinks, how good things used to be. And on one of these such trips, he brings his brash brother-in-law, Paulie, along with him. And he begins to retell a story again of this is what happened between me and Adrian in this moment. And it was so great. And as they're standing there talking, this is the advice, the reality check that Paulie passes on to Rocky. Check this out. You're living backwards. You just keep living your life looking in the rearview mirror, and it's keeping you from attacking the opportunities that you have lying out in front of you, the obstacles that you have been created to conquer in your life, because you just keep living your life wishing for what the old days brought. And you see, about 3,500 years ago, there was a group of people who experienced the exact same cognitive bias in their life. There's a story of a group of people called the Israelites. And we pick up their story. What we know is that for over 400 years, they had been held in captivity as slaves in Egypt. 430 years, to be exact. They had been slaves at the hands of Pharaoh, beaten every single day, whipped every single day, starved to death every single day, living a life void of freedom, until one day God calls this guy named Moses to the forefront, a guy who can't talk very well, who isn't confident in his ability, and he says, go to Pharaoh and tell Pharaoh to let my people go. And so Moses, after a little bit of fighting, he goes, and he does so, and Pharaoh says no, and so we go through all of these plagues and all of this pleading until Pharaoh's like, I've had enough of these people and all of this hardship, go in freedom. And for the very first time in their life, they're experiencing this freedom. For those of you who have grown kids, it's this moment where your kids begin to do life out on their own. And as they do so, what they find in the real world is obstacle after obstacle after obstacle. And every time they face an obstacle, they don't embrace their freedom. and tackle the obstacle that's out in front of them, what they end up doing is going back to this one sentiment over and over and over again. We find this very thing in the book of Numbers, chapter 14. Here is what these people did. When faced with obstacles in the real world while being free and not slaves at the hands of Pharaoh, being beaten and whipped and starved to death every single day, they said this: "Wouldn't it be better for us to return to Egypt?" Then they plotted among themselves, "Let's choose a new leader and go back to Egypt. We don't know how we're going to get across the Red Sea. Sure, God has been faithful and he's freed us from captivity. But wouldn't it be better if we just went back to Egypt and got whipped every single day and died at the hands of Pharaoh while being slaves? We don't know what we're going to do for drinking water. And here we are, we're thirsty out here. And God's provided again and again and again and again. And sure, we should trust him. But wouldn't it just be easier if we went back to Egypt and we thirsted to death there by being whipped every single day? We don't know what we're going to do for food, and God's provided water, and he split the Red Sea, and he's about to send manna down. But we don't know what we're going to do for food every day. Wouldn't it just be easier if we went back to Egypt and became slaves again and starved to death every single day there?" And we look at this story and what's taking place, and all of us, I'd venture to guess, have the same reaction. Am I right? How stupid could you be? That is not logical. And yet oftentimes what I miss in my own life and my own story is that I have the exact same reaction. Is that instead of looking ahead and tackling the obstacles and the opportunities that lie in front of me, I continue to live life looking in the rearview mirror. Looking back on how things used to be and wondering if it just would have been easier if we just go back. And what I miss along the way is this: there's no going back. It's a waste of time to even think in that direction because there's no going back. But that isn't all that we do in our lives. We don't just use this natural reaction of going back to the past, but we also bust out this natural reaction when faced with the obstacles of life of making excuses. A couple hundred years later, God chooses a man out of many to lead his people into battle against a Midianite army that outnumbers the Israelite forces by over 100,000 soldiers, about 132,000 to 30,000. And he chooses this man, Gideon, and he says, "Gideon, I'm empowering you, I'm choosing you, I'm foretelling that you are going to win and be victorious in battle, so much so that I don't want you to put your confidence in yourself, and I'm going to whittle your numbers down from 30,000 to 300. And so you're going to walk into battle 300 against 132,000. And you're still going to win, and you're still going to be victorious because you have me on your side." And when God chooses Gideon out, and he foretells this, and he lays this out for him, this was Gideon's response in Judges chapter 6. Check this out. "Then the Lord turned to him and said, 'Go with the strength you have and rescue Israel from the Midianites. I, the God of the universe, the one who holds the world in his hands, who sees all of eternity, I am sending you.' And this is Gideon's reaction. 'But Lord,' Gideon replied, 'how can I rescue Israel? My clan is the weakest in the whole tribe of Manasseh, and I am the least in my entire family. I'm too small, God. I'm too weak. I'm too young. I'm too old. I'm not good enough. I'm not strong enough. I don't have enough skill in that area. I don't have enough time. I don't have enough money.' What's your excuse?" In the same way, Rocky decides that the way he is going to move forward and stop focusing on the past in his life is to put something in front of him that he can fight again. To pick the boxing gloves back up into his 60s and decide to fight, because that is what keeps his focus on something out in front, on a battle to be fought, on an obstacle out in front, instead of living in the past. And yet when Rocky decides to venture back into boxing, he has a conversation with his son. And his son, in hearing the way in which he's going to tackle and attack this obstacle in his life, gives him this feedback. Check this out. You're too old. Everybody will think you're crazy. It's just your ego talking. Time catches up with all of us. And for every single one of us, within our own stories and our own obstacles, there are excuse after excuse that always rises to the surface in our lives. It could be internally, it could be externally, from the people who are around us and the people who love us, offering all the reasons why this will never work and all the reasons why you'll never be successful at tackling that obstacle out in front of us. And we find ourselves living in the pit of excuses, continuing to remind ourselves day after day that you'll never be able to overcome it anyway. So why even try? And we find ourselves going back to the past, and we find ourselves making excuses. But then, maybe more powerful than all, we find ourselves paralyzed in this third place. That when we find ourselves up against obstacles in our lives and our stories, the quickest place for us to go is to begin to blame. Is that we begin to shift blame and we make it our sole purpose in the midst of life's difficulties and the obstacles we face to figure out who or what caused that obstacle to be in my way and to begin to assign blame to the someone or the something that caused me to be in this predicament. And there's this powerful part of the movie where it's announced that Rocky has agreed to an exhibition bout with the current heavyweight champion of the world, some 30-some years his younger. And when it's announced that he would take on this fight, there is this simultaneous story that's happening in his son's life, the son that we just met in that last video clip. That his son finds himself at this point in his life where he is less than content with the direction in which his life is headed. He's having trouble with his friends. He's having trouble at his workplace. And it feels like he just can't get ahead, and he's not happy in what he's doing. And in the midst of all of that discontentment and unhappiness and the obstacle of what to do to change that, he seeks out his father to have a conversation not about what it would take to fix and to overcome the obstacles that he sees in his life, but to begin to assign blame on why the obstacles are there in the first place. Check this out. Instead of attacking the obstacle in front, we find ourselves oftentimes looking for where to point the finger. And thinking that protective instinct that lives inside of us, that reaction that's a part of our human nature that protects us and keeps us safe, that the safest place for us to be is just to signify why it is we're in this predicament. And it couldn't possibly be my fault. And even if we were correct in that assessment, that it isn't our fault, what we fail to recognize in our initial human reaction is this, is that even if we were to find the someone or the something that is to blame for the reason why we find ourselves in this predicament, up against this obstacle, assigning blame only keeps us paralyzed in the present. Blame never moves us forward. It never creates a battle plan for us to begin to attack the opportunities and the obstacles that are right in front of us. It just keeps us standing where we are, pointing the finger at everybody else. And if you think you're alone in this, the very first man who ever walked on the earth struggled with this very thing. That when faced with the consequences of his own decision, his initial human reaction was to pass blame, was to become paralyzed in the present instead of looking at how to attack the past, instead of owning up to his mistakes and then moving forward. You see, this is how Adam responded and reacted
in the aftermath of his sin. In Genesis chapter 3, the man replied, "It was the woman you gave me who gave me the fruit, and I ate it." Now, you've probably heard this story of Adam and Eve before, but what you may not have ever recognized is this. Adam just doesn't simply assign blame to the woman. Adam assigns blame and lays it at the feet of two different people. Did you catch that? "Yeah, it was the woman who gave me the fruit, but let's go back to the beginning, God. The only reason the woman was able to give me the fruit is because you gave me the woman in the first place. It ain't my fault, it's your fault, God. It's her fault, God. It's his fault, God. It's that thing's fault. It's these circumstances' fault. That's the reason I am where I am." And we find ourselves paralyzed in our reaction, assigning blame. We find ourselves paralyzed in making excuses. We find ourselves paralyzed in reacting by going back and living in the rearview mirror. But how do we shake that, Ben? Well, we shake it by shifting from reacting to responding. And there is a stark difference between those two words, and here's the difference. Reacting is solely based in emotion. It is birthed from our human nature and what comes natural to us. "Oh, I thought it, I felt it, I say it immediately." That's what a reaction is. A response is birthed in maturity. Responses are capable of stepping back, assessing the situation, and then making a call on how to generate the best possible outcome. A reaction is emotion-based. A response is maturity-based. And in order for us to tackle the obstacles in front of us, we must stop reacting out of our human nature, and we must be mature enough to step back and respond in a healthy way. And it begins here. That in order for us to respond in a healthy way to the obstacles in front of us, we must be courageous enough at some point to narrow the focus. King Solomon offers this advice, one of the wisest guys to ever walk on this earth. "Look straight ahead and fix your eyes on what is in front of you." Do you know what King Solomon is essentially saying? In order for you to drive straight, you must look at one thing and one thing only, the road that is directly in front of you. You must make a decision at some point in the world in which you live, in which there are a million things vying for your attention and a million different distractions, minute by minute in the life in which you live, that this obstacle that's in front of me right now is too important for me to be distracted by all of this other stuff. And so I need to narrow my focus and I need to cut things out, because right now my sole focus needs to be on how I fix this marriage. I need to narrow my focus, and the obstacle that lies out in front of me is how I lead my kids well. I'm going to narrow my focus, and I'm going to make it my priority to model Jesus to my kids every single day in the things in which I do. That right now, I'm going to narrow my focus, and we're in this financial hole, and we need to narrow our focus and put all of our attention to fixing this one thing. That here we are as a business, here we are in a workplace, and in order to fix this obstacle, I've got to block out all the other jobs and all the other distractions, and we've got to focus on fixing this one thing. Why? Because every obstacle of our lives is not natural and it is not easy. It will take work and focus in order for you to be able to step over that hurdle in your life, in order for you to be able to overcome it. And at some point, we have to be courageous enough to say, "This is too important for me to be distracted anymore. I'm going to narrow my focus on this battle, on this fight, on this obstacle, and give it everything I have right here, right now, to get over it." Secondly, we have to make the decision to stop people-pleasing. And y'all, I get it. There is this tug inside of me every single day in which it feels like my sole purpose is for everybody to like me. I want everybody to like me. I want everybody to be happy with the decisions that I'm making. I want everybody to look at me as if I'm a good leader. And it can become very easy to base successes and failures in life solely on what other people think of the decisions that I'm making and the progress that I'm making. And time again, this craving distracts us from the truth that just isn't possible. It isn't possible for everybody to like you all the time. Even Abraham Lincoln knew this. Some people can like you all the time. All the people can like you some of the time, but you'll never get to a place where all the people like you all the time. You can't please everyone all the time. And oftentimes, what we have to recognize, this is the maturity, stepping back, assessing the situation. Basing our decisions solely on pleasing people will move us in the wrong directions more times than it will move us in the right direction. And this is why. Because even the people who love you most have a selfish bone inside of them in which they are more concerned about moving themselves forward than moving you forward. About themselves feeling good as opposed to you feeling good. And the reason why they're upset with the decisions you're making is not because those decisions are not moving you in the right direction. It's because it's not contributing as much as they want you to contribute to moving them forward, to making them feel better, to making them not feel as bad about the decisions they're making every single weekend. And at some point, we have to step back and say, in order for me to move in the right direction, I can't move in the direction that you want me to go. And I can't base this decision on whether or not you're happy or not. I'm basing this decision as a Christ follower on whether it's right and what God wants me to do. And that's it. Y'all okay? You see, Paul, in one of his letters, offers this advice, or maybe simply this example. When in Galatians chapter 1, he writes this: obviously, I'm not trying to win the approval of people, but of God. If pleasing people were my goal, I would not be Christ's servant. I'm not trying to win the approval of people. I'm done being a people pleaser. If I were trying to win everybody else's approval, it would prohibit me. Did you catch what he said there last? It would prohibit me from being God's servant, from being the Christ follower that I have been called to be. As Rocky's trying to decipher whether this is all a mistake and everybody else is right, maybe this is ego. Maybe I'm too old. He has this conversation with an old friend. And this old friend offers him this advice that absolutely changes his perspective on how he moves forward and tackles the obstacle effectively. Check this out. What matters is how this looks to you. And if I could just take it a step further, if you're in this room and you consider yourselves to be a Christ follower, what matters is how this looks to God. You can't move forward in what God has for your future and the way in which he wants you to overcome the obstacles of your life if you are more focused on what everybody else wants you to do and how they want you to overcome the obstacles of your life. We have to be willing to stop people-pleasing and realize I can't live that way to be healthy. And then third, we have to keep moving forward. Conquering any obstacle in life will require an intense amount of perseverance. We all know this, deep down, right? Then the struggles and the difficulties and the obstacles of life that are hard, it'll take perseverance because there will be more moments than what you can count in which it feels like the easy way is just to throw in the towel. It's just to quit. It's just to protect yourself and not risk failure. It's just to turn back. And yet there's an opportunity that lies out in front of us. An opportunity to experience something better on the other end, but experiencing that something better will only happen if we are willing to continue to push forward. No matter how much we've been knocked down, no matter how much we've been battered, You see, in spite of those difficulties, we make up our mind to push forward. And that same guy we talked about earlier, Paul, in one of his other letters, he writes this, and this is so good, y'all. This gives us the strength to continue to push forward. It changes our perspective, much like Rocky's friend changed his perspective. This is what Paul writes in 2 Corinthians. We are pressed on every side by troubles. No doubt, right? That's what it feels like oftentimes in our world, that we are being pressed on every side, but we are not crushed. We are perplexed, but not driven to despair. We are hunted down, but never abandoned by God. We get knocked down, but we are not destroyed. And this is so good. This is the perspective change that I was talking about. Through suffering, our bodies continue to share in the death of Jesus, so that the life of Jesus may also be seen in our bodies. Do you know what Paul is saying here, y'all? This is so incredible. Paul is saying that in every obstacle and difficulty you face in life, you have an opportunity to put on display who Jesus is, not in spite of your difficulties, but because of the difficulties you face, and how you're willing to persevere through that, and how you're willing to set an example through that, and how you're willing to keep going, even though you get knocked down, even though you're perplexed, even though you're pressed on every side. You set an example to your kids, to your spouse, to your coworkers, to your friends, on what it looks like to keep going, no matter what this world throws at you, towards the right stuff. After this difficult moment between Rocky and his son, where all of the blame and all of the excuses are being thrown around, Rocky has this powerful moment in which he comes back to his son and he offers this incredible advice. But what I want you to hang on to is this. This incredible advice isn't just relevant in Rocky and his son's life. This advice has the power to make a drastic change in your story and the way in which we attack the obstacles that lie in waiting in our future. And if you need to throw some air punches because you're so fired up after this, by all means, go for it. Check this out. It's about how hard you can hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. And I picture this moment where our Heavenly Father looks at us, much like Rocky looks at his son. He says, I love you. You're my son. I will always love you. But until you start living your life and put away the people pleaser inside of you, and put away the excuses inside of you, and put away the blame inside of you, you're never going to have the life that I intended you to live. I'll always love you, but there's something better waiting for you. You got to keep moving no matter how hard it gets. And while each of those first three things are incredibly powerful and relevant for our journeys towards the obstacles in our lives that lie out in front of us, I've kept the trump card in my back pocket this whole time, because I believe with all of my heart this fourth one is more powerful than any of the other three. You see, that when we face obstacles in our lives, we have an opportunity that allows us to conquer those obstacles better than anything else we can do. And that opportunity lies in our willingness to find someone bigger. See, I said responding is based in maturity, the maturity of stepping back and assessing the situation. And a necessary response to the obstacles in our life is an admittance that for most of the obstacles we face in our life, they will be bigger than me. Y'all okay? That I won't be good enough, strong enough, smart enough of a leader. That obstacle will flat out beat me to my knees if I battle this by myself. And yet the good news is this, is that with our life here on earth, we don't have to battle it by ourselves. We don't have to do this alone. In fact, the only one who is bigger than the obstacles we face in our life is the one who every single time wants to get into the ring with us, is the one who wants to fight on our behalf and go to work with us and get into the trenches and fight the messes alongside of us. But you've heard me say this a million times, and yet oftentimes in the chaos of life, it's so easy for it to just go right over our heads again and again and again. We have a God who loves us too much to get in the ring without being invited in the ring. He wants a person that's willing to surrender part of their story to say, I'm inviting the God of the universe who holds the world in his hands to help me fight the obstacles of my world. And it's the very thing that David recognized when he was going up against his own giant in life. He was capable of stepping back and recognizing, I'm not big enough, I'm not strong enough, I don't have enough weapons to defeat you. But what I do have is something that is better than it all. He looked at Goliath and he said, you come at me with sword and spear and javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of heaven's armies, the God of the armies of Israel whom you have defied. And then in all of this confidence, it's like these words just start pouring out. And I'm not sure whether I condone this or not, but it's funny nonetheless. Today the Lord will conquer you, and I will kill you and cut off your head. And then I will give the dead bodies of your men to the birds and wild animals, and the whole world will know that there is a God in Israel. What if we looked at the obstacles of our lives and we said, I've invited the God of the universe into my story, into the middle of this obstacle, and he's bigger than you. And because I have the God of the universe on my side, I will cut off your head. I will win today. I have that kind of confidence in my God. But it only begins when we are courageous enough to be people who say, I can't do this on my own. I can't keep fighting this battle on my own. I can't keep making this about just checking the boxes. That I need a relationship, and I need to toe side by side with the God of the universe and sacrifice and surrender some of my story so that he can help me fight these battles and help me overcome these obstacles in my life. Here's what I believe with all of my heart, y'all. Our decision in that area determines our future. Where do you want to go from here? Do you want to be paralyzed in the present, moving backwards? Or do you want to tackle the obstacles that feel insurmountable to write the ending of this story, your story, in much the same way you aspire to as you walk out of that movie theater every single time? We have that opportunity, but the choice is yours. Would you pray with me? Father, this morning, God, we thank you for being a God who wants to hop into the ring with us. God who wants to fight on our behalf. God who wants us to overcome the obstacles. A God who provides the guidance of taking the steps of narrowing your focus, and stop people pleasing, and to persevere and keep moving forward no matter what this world throws at you. But even greater than that, a God who's willing to be on my side, who holds the entire world in his hands and yet cares about my individual world. Maybe this morning you walked into this room and you're thinking, man, I've heard that several times and I've always been reluctant to take that step. But it's no secret that this world has beaten me to my knees. I can't fix this on my own. I can't overcome this obstacle on my own. And I just keep giving in to my own human reactions. And I'm to the point where I know I need help. I know I need someone bigger, but I don't even know how to start that. If that's you, and right where you sit, it's this easy. In your own heart, simply say, God, I need your help. I've made mistakes, and I'm hurting right now. And I'm lost right now. And this obstacle is bigger than me. I don't know what to do except for this. Would you help me? Would you come into my story? Would you fix what's broken and not right? And just praying that prayer. Sometimes what holds us back is this belief that if God really knew my story, there's no way. And on this day, I couldn't be further from the truth. We have a God who knows the worst about you and still loves you most. Doesn't hesitate a second on getting in the ring with you. So God, because of that, we thank you. It's in your name that